So today we will discuss about the principle of surrender based on Vibhishan's surrender to Ram. So the six elements of surrender. So normally we think of surrender in terms of, say, the classic example of surrender is Draupadi. She raises her hand in helplessness and she surrenders to Krishna. Now, this notion of surrender often stresses on helplessness and utter dependence on Krishna. And yes, that is also an important element of surrender. But in the Bhagavad Gita, we see Krishna tells Arjuna, surrender to sarvadharmantaritya mamekam sharanam. And Krishna tells Arjuna to surrender. Arjuna says, yes, I will put you on the Kashya Vachanamta in 1873. Says, I will surrender to you. But what is this form of surrender? This form of surrender is not raising his hands up in helplessness. Or Arjuna surrender meant lifting up his Gandiva bow and becoming ready to fight. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partho Dhyodhara. Arjuna has picked up his bow and ready to fight. That means, what will be the way for us to surrender will vary according to time, place, circumstances. For Draupadi, in her situation, surrender meant just raising her hand in helplessness. For Arjuna, in his situation, surrender meant fighting the war. So therefore, surrender, if we think of it only in terms of raising our hands and being utterly dependent, we may start thinking it's impractical. It's not practical. Once I was giving a class, one student asked a question that you say surrender to Krishna. So if I just surrender to Krishna, when is Krishna going to pass me in my exams? Surrender to Krishna means that you study so that you pass your exams. Surrender to Krishna doesn't mean that you give up your studies. Many times students, when they have their exams coming up, the preparatory review, when initially people are asking, Utsaha mai. At that time they think, hey, all this knowledge is material. It's all ultimately useless. All I just want to study Shastra. But interesting, throughout the semester they won't study Shastra. But just by the time they have to study their academic books, they fall in love with Shastra. Why? Because at that time, also they don't want to read philosophy. They want to read Ramayana, Mahabharata, Lilamrita. Because that is the mind's way of avoiding the hard work of study. So this is, if we think of surrender as a spiritual rationalization for our laziness. Surrender as a spiritual rationalization for our laziness. Then actually, we are not surrendering at all. We are simply giving a spiritual mask to our lethargy or our apathy. So surrender involves a broad gamut of activities. And one aspect of it can be raising one's hand in surrender. But we'll come to that. We'll see. Go to the next slide. So both of them surrender, but they surrender in different ways. And this will be the main theme of our class. I'll come back to this later. But Vibhishan, when he surrendered to Ram, some people think that he was Bhratradohi. He betrayed his brother and went to the side of his opponent. But that is not at all the reality. It was an act of great courage and at the same time, it was an act of great caution and consideration. How that is so, we will discuss. Just move ahead for the time being. We know that there is this, in the Harivatta Vilas, based on the Puranas, the definition of surrender is given. Anukulyasya santalpa pratikulyasya varjanam rakshishyati vishwaso goptritve varanantatha atmanikshepa karpanye sharvidha sharanagati. So he says, anukulyasya sankalpa. Sankalpa means to accept. To make a resolution to accept. Anukulyasya, that is favorable, we accept it. Pratikulyasya varjanam. That which is unfavorable, we reject it. Rakshishyati vishwaso. Vishwas is faith or confidence. What confidence? Rakshishyati. The Krishna will protect me. And then, Goptrutve varanantha. Goptrutve means maintenance. So protection means when there is danger, we have confidence that Krishna will protect. But it's not that when there is no danger, I take care of myself. No. Even when there is no danger, even in the normal course of life, we recognize that Krishna is my maintainer. I am not my own independent maintainer. That is,
పృథ్వీ వర్ణంత ఆత్మ నిక్షేప. నిక్షేప మీన్స్ టు ఆఫర్ వన్స్ సెల్ఫ్. ఆత్మ మీన్స్ టు ఆఫర్ వన్స్ హోల్ సెల్ఫ్ టు కృష్ణ. అండ్ కార్పణ్య, కార్పణ్య మీన్స్
హ్యూమిలిటీ.
వేర్ వన్ థింగ్స్ దట్ యు నో ఐఎమ్ ఐఎమ్ నథింగ్ విదౌట్ కృష్ణ ఐఎమ్ నథింగ్. ద సిక్స్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ సరెండర్. నౌ ఇన్ దిస్ ఇన్ గోల్ సో హియర్ విల్ సీ దట్ ద లాస్ట్ ఫోర్ ఆర్ డిస్పొజిషన్స్ అండ్ ద ఫస్ట్ టూ ఆర్ యాక్షన్స్. ద లాస్ట్ ఫోర్ సే కృష్ణ ఇస్ మై ప్రొటెక్టర్, కృష్ణ ఇస్ మై మెయింటైనర్, ఐ ఆఫర్ మై సెల్ఫ్ ఫుల్లీ టు కృష్ణ. దట్ ఓ ఐ గుడ్ ఫర్ నథింగ్ విదౌట్ కృష్ణ. నౌ ఆల్ దీస్ ఆర్ డిస్పొజిషన్స్. యూ నాట్ జస్ట్ ఆర్టిఫిషియలీ imagine that, oh, I believe Krishna will protect me. Oh, this will take time to develop. There are dispositions which will be gradually cultivated. But what we can do about surrender is the first two. First two are actions. And, okay, I can always be thinking, what is favorable for me, what is unfavorable for me. And, so, we can accordingly choose. Now, some devotees, when they want to sit in a class, or want to sit in the they want to do japa. But they may have some back problems. They want to sit on a chair with a backrest, or may sit against, leaning against the wall. Now, if that is what decreases the back pain or the back discomfort, and they can focus on Krishna, that is anukul for them. But somebody else rests against the back, rests against the wall, and then they take shelter of the wall. Right? Well, that wall becomes a substitute for Krishna. They take shelter of Krishna and they surrender to Krishna in the form of the mode of ignorance. But they are not aware, they are not thinking about Krishna at all. So that time the same thing can be unfavorable for some. The same act of leaning against a wall while sitting, that will be favorable for some people, that will be unfavorable for some people. So we have to evaluate. Now both of them, evaluating favorable and unfavorable, that requires intelligence. And executing the choice, that requires action. So here, Krishna gives a the Puranas give us, the Bhakti tradition gives us an example of a definition of surrender which is actually proactive. It is not that surrender means passivity. Prabhupada was always surrendered to Krishna, but in his surrender, he was trying so many things. In his age, people would come to Vrindavan in 60, 65, 70, and they would retire to Vrindavan. And the other Rajivasis are observing that Bhaktivedanta Swami is coming to Vrindavan again and again, is going out of Vrindavan. Some of them think he's very attached. He should be attached to Vrindavan, he's attached to worldly affairs. But Pradhidhar did not know, Prabhupada was far from being attached to worldly affairs. He was attached, yes, it was not a worldly affair, but he was attached to the affair of lifting up the world. Now elevating people in the world, and that's why he's coming back again and again. So, and their mode of surrender was just live in Vrindavan, go to Goswami's temple, say darshan, and chant Radhe Radhe. That was their concept of surrender. That's also good. If that's what one feels inspired to do, that's what one is capable of doing, it's fine. But for Prabhupada, for him surrender meant following the instruction of the spiritual master. And spiritual master had told him to preach all over the world, especially in the Western countries, especially in the English language. And Prabhupada saw Vrindavan not as a retirement ground. Prabhupada saw Vrindavan as a preparation ground. It's a complete difference. But there are many Vrajivasis may also surrender to Krishna and come to Vrindavan for retirement. Prabhupada had come not for retirement, but for preparation. So, for him, surrender meant going to the West. Now, when Krishna played the flute and the gopis came running to Krishna. Now, they're running towards Krishna, that is their surrender. Just give up everything else. In fact, the gopis demonstrate sarva dharma pratyajma ekam sharanam. They gave up all their duties and just came straight towards Krishna. Similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had given the prophecy that my holy name will spread all over the world. And Swami Prabhu had given the instruction, preaching the rest of the world. So Prabhupada took that instruction and sarva dharma pratyajma ekam sharanam. So for Srila Prabhupada, surrendering meant going to the West. For most people, going to the West often is motivated by materialistic desires. They want to advance material, that's why they go to the West. But for Prabhupada, the activity which most people might do be motivated by materialism, Prabhupada was a very simple activity, but they were motivated by devotion. So we cannot stereotype surrender to a particular form. This is surrender and this is lack of surrender. Now, what, we are all in different situations, and what may be favorable for us in our devotion may be not favorable for somebody else. And what may be favorable for somebody else may be unfavorable for us. And this is why bhakti is eminently an individual process. It is a social process in the sense that we practice bhakti in the association of devotees. But it's an individual process in the sense that each of us has to ourselves advance. Prabhupada, as we would say that, we have to fly our own plane. Give the example that if there are fighter pilots who are in a war, at that time, although they may all be together, if one fighter pilot is hit, the others cannot really help the fighter pilots. So each of them has to attack the opponents themselves, and each of them has to parry the attack, dodge the attacks of the opponents also themselves. So like that, we are together. Together we can get inspiration, together we can get guidance, together we can consult and learn. But once we are in the air, we have to fight on our own. And each of us needs to surrender to Krishna. Of course, if you are associated with devotees who are also inspired to surrender to Krishna, then their surrender can inspire us. At the same time, the way they surrender may be quite different from the way we are in, the situation we are in, and how we need to surrender. So, in the Ramayana, when Ram finally comes to know where Sita is, he sends Hanuman. Hanuman goes and has a tail blazing and a trail blazing adventure. So he sets his tail, Ravana sets his tail ablaze. But, you know, with the blazing tail, Ravana makes a, Hanuman makes a trail that is also blazing. Wherever he goes, he sets that part on fire. And after Hanuman goes, Hanuman is about to depart. At that time, Hanuman is climbing on the tallest building in Lanka, actually on the wall of Lanka, and he shouts out. Ravana is furious to see his golden city ablaze, almost half of it. At that time, Hanuman's hope initially had been that there could be some reconciliation. He tried to make Ravana see sense. When he saw that Ravana was not able to see sense, then he's a warrior, a Kshatriya. So warriors, sometimes you may read Mahabharata, you may read Ramayana, Bhagavata, they all threaten each other. I will send you to the abode of Yama today. Today your body will become the food for vultures. So all this, why do they, is it simply bragging? It's not just bragging. It's basically one strategy in fighting is intimidating. You know, people can fight as long as their spirit is there to fight. So if an opponent can break the morale of a warrior, then after defeating that warrior becomes easier. So Hanuman, he wanted, if Ravana was not going to be changed, then he wanted to at least make the other Rakshasa see sense. So he shouted this from the wall of the Lanka. He said that I am the least powerful among all the monkeys that are soon going to attack Lanka. And seeing that, he flew away. Ravana seething in anger. And then finally they managed to extinguish the fires. And next morning he called an assembly of war. He called all his warriors, all his generals, and he told them, we had thought that this Lanka was impenetrable. But a mere monkey has penetrated into our ranks, has killed many of our warriors, and destroyed my favorite gardens. It was Ashoka Vatika. Hanuman made it for Ravana, Shoka Vatika. Filled him with grief. Oh, what happened to this? And he says, on top of that, he's burned half of our city. Oh, warriors, this is a grave situation. And then Ravana started flattering. He says, you know, a king who makes decisions on his own without consulting his ministers, the king is short-sighted. And he will meet his ruin. But a wise king always consults his ministers. And based on their counsel, he makes a mature decision. Therefore, I now ask you for your opinion. How should we deal with this crisis? Now, Ravana, he was speaking all these words, but he had to bite his word later. Because sometimes there are people who just ask for opinion, but what they want is simply vindication of their opinion. That means they ask us, but they want to do what they want us to do. They want to do. And they simply want us to ratify what they're doing. So, Ravana was like that. So, he expected all his generals, they will say the same thing. And they all said, you know, his commander Prahasta said, actually, this monkey is nothing. But he caught us unawares. That's why we had a problem. In the future, we prepared, we can crush a thousand more monkeys like him. Another warrior said, actually, why do we wait for them? No, we can right now go over across the ocean and we can catch them by surprise and we can kill them then. Other said, no, there's no need. We can send a message to Sugriva. The governor Sugriva was also with them. Tell Sugriva that we have no enmity with you. And create dissension between the Vanaras and Ram, and then we can attack Ram. But they also had to use various strategies. And only one person was silent. That was Vibhishan. And before Vibhishan could speak, Kumbhakarna wrote. Kumbhakarna, actually, Kumbhakarna said, oh Ravana, you say that a wise king consults his ministers before taking any action. Why did you not consult us before kidnapping Sita? He said, it is your foolishness that you provoked Ram by kidnapping Sita. But it is your good fortune that you have a brother like me who can correct the mistakes that you have done. Let Ram come and I'll kill him.
So, Vibhishan was just trying to get one upsmanship. Vibhishan actually felt very wrong. Because he was actually very powerful. But he had got that blessing which had turned into a curse, and he had to sleep most of the life, most of the time of his life. So, sorry, Kumbhakarna, sorry. So, all this was spoken by Kumbhakarna, I'm sorry.
So, Kumbhakarna spoke this, and he, so now Ravana felt smarted to be, you know, inside, disguised like this, but he said, he knew that Vibhishan was, sorry, Kumbhakarna was too important and allied to him. Thank you for your help. And he sat down, and then Vibhishan got up. And Vibhishan said, now, I have observed the omens. All over Lanka, there are signs of impending destruction. Lankini, who is the goddess protecting Lanka, she came to me and she said that a mare monkey knocked her down. And she was undefeatable. Brahma had told her long ago that when the monkey knocks her down, that will be the time of the destruction of Lanka. And Ram, you think that Ram is no ordinary, is an ordinary warrior, but think that he alone killed 14,000 Rakshasas along with Kara and Dushyanta at Jalasthan, single-handedly. And Hanuman single-handedly did so much damage in Lanka. Now, soldier warriors, a king fights a war only when three conditions. When he is more powerful than the opponents, when there is no other solution that can work out, and when there is substantial gain to be achieved in the war. He said, oh Ravana, turn towards Ravana, I'm speaking to all of the Ravana, remember that you do not, by Brahma's boon, you do not have immunity from humans. Actually, Ravana, when Hanuman was going back, he also shouted, first he shouted, you know, I am the least powerful of all warriors. And secondly, he looked at Ravana and said, okay, Ravana, you don't have protection from monkeys also. Now, for him, monkeys were so tiny, they don't ask for any protection. So, Vibhishan reminded him. And as Vibhishan spoke this, Ravana also became a little sober. And at that time, Ravana, after he became circumcised, he said, I want to think. And he dismissed the assembly. Then that night, Ravana sat down and started thinking. And before this, one more thing is, what is there to be gained? There's three things. Is the enemy more powerful than you? Have other means been tried? And is there something to gain? Then here is a very amazing analogy. He says, now Sita is the goddess of fortune. But here Vibhishan compares Sita. He says, Sita is like a dangerous snake. And she has been put, who has put this dangerous snake around you? Her smile is a poison fang. And her, your thinking about her is the bite that is causing that poison to enter into. And in this way, you, if you allow the poison, this poisonous snake of Sita to keep biting you, you will be killed. Now, at one level, when they say that Sita is a goddess of fortune, how can you compare her to a poisonous snake? But again, it's a matter of what is one's attitude. So, if he's thinking of Sita with the enjoying mentality, then Sita that enjoyment-ality itself makes Sita like an evil snake for him. So after this, when Ravana circumspectly goes back to his and starts thinking, he says, I must have Sita. He says, when he's thinking about Ram's strength, he's a little sober. But after his thoughts, he goes to Sita and says, no, I cannot be without her. I already fought so much. And he also has his intrinsics. If Ram is really Vishnu, then it is glorious to die at the hands of a great object. So I'll fight. He doesn't want to die, of course. But he just doesn't want to give up. Then the next early morning, Vibhishan comes to Ravana's palace. And Vibhishan approaches him. And the Rakshasas also have their Brahmanas. They are called Yadudhanas. And these Brahmanas, they perform rites, usually tamasic rites, for the empowerment of the Rakshasas. So the Yadudhanas are performing yajnas. And they are offering sacrifices to invoke blessings on the Ram, on Ravana. And Vibhishan comes in, and Vibhishan again beseeches Ravana. So he as soon as he starts speaking, Ravana just turns away. And Vibhishan understands something has happened. Last night, he was some circumspect, but over the night, his discussion seems to have changed. He tries to speak to him, trying to desperately make him see sense. He says, you have so many beautiful queens. Why do you need Sita? Just let her go and you can save the whole dynasty. He just turns away from him and Vibhishan realizes it's hopeless. Later in the assembly takes place. At that time, everybody speaks. And they all say that yes, we can fight and we can win the war. And Ravana, he gets up to speak. And he says, I have decided that surrender is the path for cowards. I would rather die than ever surrender to an enemy. And with all of you by my side, no chance that we will meet with. We will fight the war. So Vibhishan decides to make one last attempt. And again speaks very strongly, imploringly. He tells Ravana, if you see anything duplicitous in me, you can neglect me, but don't neglect my counsel. Because if you fight against Ram, not only you, the whole dynasty will be destroyed. There is no one who can win against you. When he speaks this, Indrajit gets angry. He says, no, how is it that the Rakshasa dynasty begot a coward like you? There is no other Rakshasa who is cowering before the enemy, and you are, because of your own fearfulness, discouraging those who are courageous. He says, a stigma on the glorious Rakshasa dynasty. So now, actually, even at that time, Vedic culture, the Rakshasas are not a part of Vedic culture, but even they have their sense of respect. And this was a serious, for a nephew to speak so offensively to his uncle, it was very grievous. Everybody was shocked. But Ravana remained silent. Then Vibhishan turned to Indrajit and he said, that you are a child. Your winning over Indra has gone to your head. That's why you do not recognize the power of Ram. And if Ravana listens to you, he and you both will be in destruction. You are actually not the son of your father. You are right now acting as the enemy of your father. When Ravana hears this, Ravana becomes angry. He says, if anybody else had spoken like this about Indrajit, he said, I would have had him executed. So Vibhishan picks up his crown. And he goes before Ravana and he puts his crown on his head. He says, I desire only your well-being. He says, whatever power I have, whatever position I have, give it all to you. I don't want anything. But please don't go the path of destruction. So Vibhishan puts his crown down and Ravana just derisively kicks off the crown. As he goes rolling down, at that time, all of Vibhishan's hopes of reconciliation also roll down. And he says, you have insulted me, you have rejected me, I will no longer stay with you. I am departing. And he departs. Along with his four trusted ministers, they also depart with him. And Ravana looks at him, Ravana has no remorse, good riddance. Another in the world opposite. Then Vibhishan comes to his own palace and he discusses with his courtiers what to do now. He says, I have three options right now. So my first option is, that I can just renounce the world, go to the Himalayas and leave this world. That way I won't be a part of all the wrongs that Ravana is doing. But I am a member of the royal dynasty and I have a duty to all the Rakshasas and I must do what I can to protect them. Otherwise, the whole Rakshasa kingdom will be destroyed. The second option I have is, I can stage a coup inside Lanka, overthrow Ravana and then hand Sita over to Ravana. And that way we can avoid the war. But, he says, I do not have the allies strong enough to wage a successful coup. Because Ravana, either people are too overawed by his power, or they are too overconfident that his power is very powerful and they will win, or they are too fearful of it. Either way, they will not raise their voice against him. Therefore, the third option for me is that I can go over to the side of Ravana and tell him that his enmity is not with the Rakshasas. His enmity is with one particular Rakshasa and his allies. And in the Rakshasa camp also, there are Rakshasas who oppose Ravana. And in this way, I can eventually, when Lanka is attacked and Lanka is defeated, I can minimize the damage. And then his promises, this is what you should do. The second thing. And then he flies across. And he comes over to Ravana. Now this is actually an act of very carefully thought as course of action. So it was not, some people say that he has betrayed his brother. But it was not that he betrayed his brother. Rather, his brother had betrayed their ways. For the sake of his own lust, he was ready to send the whole dynasty into a terrible war. So, Vibhishana acted to protect his race. And if that required going against his brother, he was ready to do that. So here, when he came to Ravana, it was very carefully thought course of action. And he did not have any guarantee that Ravana would accept him. So when he came, naturally he was a Rakshasa. And the Vanaras were alarmed. And he was there in the sky. He had mystical ability to fly and come. So the Vanaras saw, they thought, shoot him right down. Who is this coming? Maybe he's a spy sent by Ravana. So that time he told them, I'm Vibhishana. And I'm the brother of Ravana. When he spoke this, the Vanaras became even more alarmed. They're about to attack. But he stayed calm. And he said, I have been rejected by Ravana and I have rejected Ravana. That's why I have come to take shelter of Ravana. So the Vanaras did not know what to do. And they had never faced anything like this. So they immediately ran to Ravana. And they reported everything to Ravana. So Ravana was sitting in his improvised fort. They are sitting together and then Ravana asked him different. So what Ravana actually said he will do, Ravana actually did. Consulted all his ministers. So then they all said, actually, as one of them said, a leopard does not change his spots. So Ravana's a Rakshasa, always a Rakshasa. You cannot trust him. Someone else said, actually, maybe we can arrest him and we can observe him somewhere. And then we can decide what to do. Others said, no, why court anything? They just send him off. Others said, no, maybe he can be, we can arrest him and we can torture him and we can extract information. They all tried different things. And then Hanuman was silent. Ram turned to Hanuman. What do you think, Hanuman? He said that I have observed his face very carefully and I don't see any duplicity in his face. Now he was very upfront. He just came and told who he was and told why he had come. I feel that we should accept him as a and trust him. So at that time, Ram says yes. He says, whatever be his motivation, he has surrendered to me and I will accept him. Sakrudeva prapannoyam tavasmi diyachite abhayam sarvada tasmai dam dam eta vratam mama. He says that if someone just comes once and says to me, I surrender to you, I grant him fearless. This is my brother. So go and call Vibhishana. Vibhishana comes. Vishnu offers obeisances to Ram. Ram lifts him up and embraces him. And then Ram tells Sugriva, go and get water from the ocean. And they go and get water from the ocean. As they are talking, when the water comes, Ram takes the water and he coronates a Bhishma as the king of Lanka. As the king of Lanka. Now this is audacious. The king of Lanka is still alive and Ram is practically a he has an army which has no weapons with it. He does that. When Ravana hears this, he's shocked. How can somebody is the prime minister and somebody else is already enthroned as the prime minister? How can you do that? He's shocked. Then he tries to laugh it off. He says, he says, one beggar has appointed another beggar as the king. He says that, but Ram, he wants to come reassure. So even before Vibhishan speaks any words, where Vibhishan says, all that he was trying to speak, actually all the Rakshasas are not your enemies, that only Ram is enemy. Ram immediately understands it, and Ram, just by that one action, assures him that he has no intention to destroy Lanka, he has no intention to annex Lanka, he has no intention of destroying the Rakshasa race also. He wants to entrust the Rakshasa race rulership to a responsible Rakshasa. So in that one action that Ram does, he wins Vibhishan. Vibhishan already surrendered to him, but all of Vibhishan's doubts are allayed. And after that, at several critical moments during the war, Vibhishan gives invaluable guidance. Especially when, at one particular time, several times actually, at one time, Indrajit arranges, he makes a figurine of Sita and he rips her into two and he brings it and says, I have killed Sita. So when the Rakshasa, the Vanaras are thrown into disarray, when Ram hears this, Ram falls into faint. And at that time, Indrajit, all the hapless warriors, they start slaughtering them. So at that time, Vibhishan comes and he tells, this is an illusion. This is Ravana fought this whole war because he wanted to enjoy Sita. He would never allow Sita to be killed. This is simply an illusion. So like that, many times, he gives invaluable guidance and thus, with Vibhishan's help, Ram attains victory. So here, when Vibhishan surrenders, if you look at the six elements of surrender, Anukulya Santan, Pratikulya Sivachana. So now, what does he do? We, in our first session, we discussed Dharma to Prema. We discussed how, when we accept the Paradharma, it is not that we give up the Aparadharma. It is rather, we choose that Aparadharma that enables us to practice Paradharma the best. For Arjuna, his Kula Dharma was coming in the way of his Paradharma, whereas Kshatriya Dharma was helping him in his Paradharma. So in the case of Vibhishan, he had a conflict. It was not that he was the betrayer of his brother. Actually, he had a conflict between his Bhratra Dharma and his Kula Dharma. His Bhratra Dharma, his duty to his brother is, younger brother should help the elder brother. But his duty to his dynasty is that he has to protect his dynasty. So he surrendered to Ram, that is, he practiced Paradharma. But in practicing Paradharma, it was also, he did his Kula Dharma. He did his duty. So surrender is essentially an action. It is not something passive. It is, we have to act. There are some situations when we are rendered helpless by life. And at that time, completely depending on Krishna, that is also a form of surrender. But surrender's essence is these two things. You know, what is favorable, what is unfavorable. So in some situations, say if somebody has got a terminal disease and there's no hope of it being cured, then at that time, surrender might mean just focusing on trying to increase one's Krishna consciousness, trying to absorb one's sense in one language. But if somebody has a disease which is curable, at that time, taking the treatment vigorously and enduring the inconvenience with the pain of the treatment, that can also be more of surrender. So as sadhakas, how do we decide what is favorable and what is unfavorable? Anukulya Sankalpa, Pratikulya Sankalpa. How do we decide that? That requires us to actually use our intelligence. And Jiva Goswami says in the Shat Sandarbhas that when we are at the stage of prema, it's called the nine stages. So we are at the stage of bhava or prema. At that time, it is our priti, it is our affection that keeps us on the spiritual platform. But before that, when we are at the stage of bhajana kriya or anantani vritti or even nishtha, at that time, it is our buddhi that keeps us on the spiritual platform. So we have to use our intelligence and decide Okay, what will keep me is spiritually focused, what will make me spiritually distracted? And choose that which will keep us spiritually focused. Now, I'll conclude with one point. I had mentioned this point in the previous class about how there is, when an airplane is going from one place to another, the airplane by default, it goes off track. And when it goes off track, what needs to be done is it has to be brought back on track. And that requires, actually, if somebody is doing it manually, there are three things. One is the driver or the pilot has to be always remember the destination. And then second, the pilot has to know, okay, I have gone off track. What is the nature of my deviation? And then what I need to bring myself to, how I need to redirect myself to correct the deviation. Or I say, one more common example is we are driving a car. Now, when you are driving a car, you just move the steering wheel a little bit. Why? Because by its own, the car may go off track. So by moving a little bit steering wheel, the car comes back on track. So then, how do we stay focused? By remembering the destination and by observing where we are going right now. So similarly, when we are practicing bhakti, firstly, we keep in mind our destination. And that means we want to advance towards Krishna, we want to attain Krishna. And once that is clear, our mind and our body, our worldly situations, they may take us in this direction, they may take us in that direction. And sometimes that is the way we may have to go for some time before we can reorient. So bhakti, when we say I have to surrender to Krishna, surrendering is not necessarily always in the form of lots of direct devotional activities. Sometimes surrender may require us to do other things and they may be the way which we surrender. So overall, if our goal is clear, like sometimes if you are going this way and you find that ahead there is a lot of traffic jam. So then we want to go that way, but we may turn left. We may take a U-turn also. Then we may turn back again and then we may come in that direction. So if our goal is clear, then we can reorient ourselves from wherever we may be and keep moving onwards. So, in Kunti Maharani's prayers, her last prayer is that just as the Ganga flows towards the ocean, let my consciousness flow towards you. He says that, second last prayer actually. But it's more or less the last request that she makes. Her last prayer is to simply offer obeisance, that is 1.8.43. So 1.8.42 is this prayer. Now interestingly here, in this prayer, Vishwanatha Chakravarti gives a very interesting commentary. He says, why is Krishna talking about a river going towards the ocean? So he says two things there. First is, when a river moves towards the ocean, nothing holds the river back. And second is, the river holds nothing back. That means, the river doesn't think, oh, I just give 90% of my water, 10% of my water I will keep for myself. No, all the water is in, it takes orders. There is the Atmanik shape, full self-surrender. So like that, whatever obstacle is there, the river somehow finds a way and keeps moving on. Similarly, for a devotee, what surrender means, there is no stereotype. If this is the path for the river to go towards the ocean, but if there is a big dam-like structure, the river may go left, may go right, may go above, may go below, somehow the river will keep moving onwards. So like that, in our life, often dam-like things will come up. That some obstacles may come up, some circumstances may come up, some emergencies may come up. At that time, sometimes, if a big barrier is there in the way of the river, the river may keep flowing, keep flowing, keep flowing, but it is not moving onwards. It appears as if it is blocked. But all that flowing, 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 what is it doing? It is eroding the barrier. And although there is no visible result of all the rivers flowing, the barrier is getting eroded. And as the barrier is getting eroded, eventually the river will burst through and flow on. Sometimes it may happen that we are practicing bhakti, we are doing a lot of activities, but nothing seems to be happening. We seem to be stuck in our spiritual life. But if we are consistently practicing bhakti, all that practice is actually eroding the barrier that is there. And once the barrier is eroded, and all the pent up energy that is there, after all of that, the river of our consciousness will flow onwards towards Krishna. So basically, if we keep it in mind that surrender is not stereotype, two main points from this class, surrender is not stereotype, and surrender is dynamic. That it's not stereotype, doing this particular activity comprises surrender, and that is not surrender. No, there is no stereotype. Draupadi by raising her hand is surrendering. Arjuna by raising his bow is surrendering. And Vishan By giving up his brother, he's also surrendering. So surrender is not stereotype. And what is favorable for us may be unfavorable for someone else. And what is favorable for us now may itself become unfavorable later. So by using our intelligence and by staying focused on our goal, we can choose, okay, this is favorable, this is unfavorable. And that way, we can keep moving towards Krishna. Whether we are moving straight or we have to go roundabout and keep moving onwards, or whether it is pushing and not moving onwards also. But if we are keeping that goal in mind and pushing onwards, even if we don't seem to be moving, we are still moving towards Krishna. Because we are actually progressing. So, most of you probably know this story. One time a man was going through a forest. At that time he saw, suddenly a voice came to him. And he said, this is God speaking. He says, move this, he says, push this boulder. It was a huge boulder over there. How can I push this boulder? Such a big boulder. And he says, push this boulder. So he came and started pushing the boulder. He was pushing. He said, God has told me I should do this. From morning to evening he was pushing. And nothing happened. One day, 2 days, 1 week, 1 month, 6 months he was pushing. And finally he protested. He said, what is this? This is God. You knew that I would not be able to move this boulder. Why did you tell me to do this? Why did you tell me to do something I would not be able to do? So God said, what did I tell you? He said, you told me to push the boulder. He said, yes. Who told you to move it? So he said, what is the use of pushing if you don't move it? He said, what is the use? He said, look at yourself. Now he had a thin, skinny fellow. Just by pushing, he had developed powerful muscles. So, similarly, sometimes we battle against circumstances, we battle against anartha, and nothing seems to be happening. But if we are battling diligently, there is external success and there is internal success. The external success is succeeding in moving the boulder up. The internal success is developing one's muscles. So sometimes you may not get any external success. And that's why if we are attached to the results, attached to the fruits, then we may feel all this is pointless. But if we know that every single time I am practicing bhakti, every single time I am chanting Hare Krishna, every single time that I am remembering Krishna, it's all contributing to my spiritual growth. Remember that? It's all, every single activity is contributing to our spiritual growth. Then we have to answer that nothing ever goes in vain. Neha vikramana ashwasthavayo nati. Nothing ever goes in waste. Krishna watches everything and Krishna rewards everything. In the Vishnu Sahasranam, it is said, Nimisho Animisha Swagri. Krishna blinks his eyes and Krishna does not blink his eyes. Now why two contradictory names? So Baldev Vidyabhushan explained in his commentary on the Gita, on the Vishnu Sahasranam that Nimisha means one who blinks his eyes. Animisha means one who does not blink his eyes. This refers to when a devotee is doing some service, a devotee is trying to practice bhakti and the devotee commits a mistake. So Krishna blinks his eyes and overlooks the mistake. And he gives the example of Putana. When Putana came to kill Krishna, Krishna closed his eyes. Krishna overlooked her evil mentality and elevated her, purified her of that mentality and elevated her towards the level of a nurse. On the other hand, if a devotee tries to render service to Krishna, then Krishna unblinkingly notices every single service that the devotee is doing. And the example for this is Draupadi. And once Krishna had come to visit the Pandavas, and Krishna and Arjuna were talking. So Draupadi came there with some fruits. So they were talking intimately, so she started going. And Krishna picked up a knife and was about to steal the fruit. The knife slipped off his hand got cut. His hand got cut and some blood came out. So Draupadi saw this, she was so alarmed. She gently took her silk sari and ripped off a part, and she bandaged Krishna. And she was frantic with anxiety, Krishna was smiling. He told Draupadi, I remember what you are doing. I will reward you. When did he reward? During the Astaraharan time. So actually, in the smallest of service that we do, Krishna is anamisha, he is unblinking. He is noticing the service and he will note and he will reward in due course of time. That's why, if we remember that surrender is dynamic, and even the smallest form of surrender that we are doing, Krishna is noticing that, Krishna will reward. Even if while surrendering, even if we struggle, even if we suffer, even if we are unable to surrender, Krishna doesn't hold it against us. Krishna notices the good that we have done and he rewards us for that. That way we can keep marching enthusiastically now. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
There are many types you mentioned.
Okay.
And how do we know what is like our type?
Okay, now, so are there many types of Sharanagati, or how do we know what is our type? It's not types of Sharanagati, it is the form of Sharanagati. Form means in what way we surrender to Krishna. The principle of surrender is one, but the expression of the principle can be many, depending on type and circumstances. It's not that every type of surrender, every form of surrender needs to have its own name. It's interesting that in the 15th chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Arjuna recollects, after Krishna has departed for the world, Arjuna recollects how Krishna protected him. He says that there are astrani amoga mahimani nirupitani nopasprasha narhidasa nivasurani. He says that great Bhishma, Drona, all the Shakya, they all directed their arrows at me. And nopasprasha, not one of those arrows hurt me. Astrani amoga mahimani nirupitani. There are great, great arrows, and these are powerful warriors. Amoga, their arrows would not go waste. But still, not even one arrow hurt me. How is that? Nopasprasha. Did it just say? Narhildas and Ivasurani. Just as Asuras, and they attack Narhildas. Who is Narhildas? Narhildas. Prahlada. So, this is Prahlada was not hurt, I was also not hurt. Now, if you see externally, there is actually no similarity between Prahlada and Arjuna. Arjuna was vigorously fighting in the war. He was doing everything possible to counter the arrows that were coming towards him. Prahlada was doing nothing to counter the arrows. And yet, Arjuna, I see that I was protected the way Prahlada was protected. So Arjuna is not looking at the external form. Arjuna is not thinking that I was fighting so fiercely. Arjuna is thinking that it was the Supreme Lord who was protecting. So surrender is one, but its expressions can be many. And as I said, the whole class was, what will be the form of expression of surrender for us? That will vary according to our circumstances. So we have to use our intelligence, take guidance from senior devotees, and accordingly do the activities that help us come closer to Krishna. Yes.
I had a question in the past time when Lakshmana and Asuka and Sita and Ram is away. So in that situation, even though Lakshmana's duty was to guard Mother Sita, but due to being caught up in a conversation with Mother Sita, that she forced him to leave and search for Lord Ram. So how do you explain when sense and sensibilities are in conflict and causing conflict and surrender? So one's the sensibility, another the senses.
Okay. So when Lakshman was told to guard Sita, but then Sita goaded him to go away from her towards Ram by using very harsh words, at that time, what would Lakshman have done at that time? Now, how was he to surrender at that particular time? On one side was his sense, another was he was also. He was hurt by that. Sensibility made him go away, but sense would help him to stay. Yes, there are situations when how we may surrender may not be clear. So at that time, we just have to. Often, there are situations in our life when we just have to take one step forward. And faith, in one sense, means taking one step forward even when we cannot see the full path. So at that time, sometimes that step may be wrong also. So it's not necessary that every single activity that we do in bhakti has to be right. It's a war. In a war, sometimes we make one strategy and we find, okay, the enemy is too strong in this strategy. We regroup, attack in some other way. So similarly, we all, while practicing bhakti, we may do certain things and they may not work out so effectively. We may take a step back and make some other strategy. So it is that even when we want to surrender to Krishna, it's not necessary that every activity that we do, even in the mood of surrender, that activity itself may be right. The intent is right. But the intent, as long as we have a desire to go close to Krishna and we do activities accordingly, that intent is what Krishna will appreciate. But sometimes the actions that we may do specifically, this is not the right thing for me. We will just take a step back. And then regroup, or we may not have to take a step back, just reorient. We make sure that we come on the right track. So in that situation, because Sita was in such a petrified and angry mood, Lakshman realized that there was nothing I could do. He just couldn't tolerate her words, and he left it. Now, was that a mistake? I thought Ram chastised her. Why did you take her words so seriously? But in that situation, that's what he did. And it was not that Ram was always afterwards goading Lakshmana. Why did he do that? Because of you, Sita was abducted. Because of you, Sita was abducted. No, it was something that happened in the circumstance. And even there's no indication that Rama and Lakshmana was burdened with guilt. Why did I leave Sita? Why did I leave Sita? Not as Ram hold it against her. And even when Ram and Lakshmana Sita are united, and then Lakshmana does not sell Sita. Why did you speak those words? Because of this, we had to fight us on the sometimes in life mistakes happen. And it is, if you can learn something from the mistakes for future decisions, that's good. Otherwise, trying to hold people's past mistakes over their head, to beat them all the time, that can be very antagonizing. And we shouldn't hold our past mistakes on our own head also. Because we are finite beings, and a part of the human condition is making mistakes. So we as long as we have a desire to serve Krishna, even if we make mistakes, we maintain the desire to serve Krishna, and Krishna gives engineers, this is not working out right. We take a step back. But even though a mistake is not necessarily a mistake in the sense that the intent to serve Krishna was good, but the execution was not always good. So we can change the execution. So the intent of surrender does not automatically guarantee the correctness of the surrender. That's why we need to also seek guidance, use our intelligence further, and keep adjusting things. The Prabhupada would try many things at different times. And Prabhupada used Harinam Sankirtan in the West. And he asked the devotees, he himself went outside of the streets and he chanted an answer. And that's what he did everywhere in the West. And he attracted many people. But when the devotees came to India and they were doing Harinam Sankirtan in the streets of Calcutta, the devotees came back and told, Prabhupada will be walking along, so people were throwing coins at us. So, then Prabhupada, no, don't do any kirtans. Because the idea was that in Bengal area, beggars would do kirtans. And by doing kirtans, they would hope that some charitable people would give us some money. So Prabhupada was conscious like that. No, we don't want this kind of perception. We are preachers. We are not, people should not mistake us to be ordinary street beggars. So Prabhupada said, don't go and skip them over there. You don't stop the kirtans completely. But basically Prabhupada, the same strategy which had worked there was not working here. So Prabhupada re-improved. And he adjusted things. That's all of us, we need to not just assume that the right intent automatically guarantees the right action. The right intent is good, but along with that we have to use intelligence, you seek guidance and evaluate. And then do course correction if it is required. Does it answer your question? Thank you. Yes, sir.
While talking about Vibhishan surrender, you mentioned that after Ravana rejected him, he consulted his courtiers and he said there are two courses of action on that. One pilgrimage or have an ally with him, who abandon Ravana or surrender to Ram. Now, if we compare Vibhishan's situation to Vidura,
So, if Vibhishan went over to the side of Ram, Vidura also was in the situation. But Vidura did not go over to the side of the Pandavas. Why is that? Is that a question? Yeah. That is because Vidura still had an affectionate relationship with Dhritarashtra. And Dhritarashtra could be relieved. So, if Vidura had gone over to the side of the Pandavas, and Vidura had been a part of the army that killed Dhritarashtra's sons, and Dhritarashtra would have been so antagonized that he would not have been able to take good counsel from Vidura. So Vidura just went on pilgrimage at that time. And later on, he came back. So in the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, the main difference is that Vidura is not the brother of the villain. The main villain is actually Duryodhana. And Dhritarashtra is more like a, like in India, for 8 years or 10 years, there was a one person in the chair of the Prime Minister and another person is actually in power. So, like that, Dhritarashtra was simply the person in the chair of the king, but Duryodhana was the real person in power. So Dhritarashtra, he also, it was not that he was a virtuous person, but he was not malicious directly. Because of his attachment with Duryodhana, he sometimes became malicious. So he was redeemable. And in order to redeem him, Vidura took the necessary energy, just went on the pilgrimage and later came back. But Ravana had clearly proven himself to be irredeemable. And Ravana was not a side factor. Ravana was the main villain in that. So there was no chance of redeeming him. That's why Vibhishan went over to the side of Ravana, but Vidura did not. Vidura stayed on so that later on he could counsel and elevate Dhritarashtra. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, please. Understand what?
Tavasmi.
Okay. How can I understand Tavasmi, that mood that I am yours, Krishna? How can we understand or apply that mood? All of us, now our actions, they derive from certain self-conceptions. Whatever we do, we may not consciously think who I am, but we all have a particular conception of who I am. And based on that conception, we naturally do certain things. So for example, if I'm a person who is a family man, then I naturally think in terms of, okay, I have to earn a living for my family, I have to take care of this, I have to take care of it. If I'm a mother, I think, okay, when's my child, I have to take care of the child. So our actions naturally stem from our self-conceptions. And we don't conceive of ourselves in isolation. No, we conceive of ourselves belonging to some group. Think, okay, I'm a part of this family, I'm a part of this dynasty, I'm a part of this country. So we have a self-conception which is also a matter of ourselves' connection with a larger whole. So bhakti is growth in bhakti. At first level, we change our self-conception. That is, I'm not the body and the soul. But that is only a part of spiritual advancement. More important part of spiritual advancement is that we conceive of ourselves as belonging to the bigger whole, which is actually the biggest whole, that is Krishna. So when that understanding that I am part of Krishna, that enters deep into our consciousness, and whatever we do, we think, okay, will this please Krishna, will this not please Krishna? Will this be favorable for Krishna, will this be unfavorable for Krishna? It's like, say if a person is working and that person gets an opportunity for a job, for a promotion or some other place where you can get more money or whatever. Then we think, okay, if I go there, these are the pros, these are the cons. So why? Because our decisions, whenever any opportunity or any situation comes in, our decision stems from our identification of who we are. Who we are and where we belong. So bhakti is not just about believing in God. It is about belonging to God. We understand believing in God is important. Yes, we should believe, but that is a very preliminary level. Bhakti means we understand that I belong to Krishna. That means whatever we decide, whatever we think, whatever we decide, we think of in terms of what is favorable for my bhakti or unfavorable for my bhakti. So in that sense, again, what this boils down to anukulya sankalpa pratitulya vachana. But of course, in the initial stages for us, we may have to consciously think like that. That, okay, this is favorable, this is unfavorable. But as we go deeper into, as we practice something more and more, this thinking will become more or less like a reflex action. This I should know. This is not favorable. This is favorable. Just as the more we identify with something, for example, if I am sitting here, and suddenly something hot touches me on my hand, immediately my hand will move. I don't have to think that way. Because survival, self-protection, that is a reflex action for us. So because I identify with the body and I identify with the well-being of the body, not necessarily, whatever sense it is, it's I am the body or it's my body or this is Krishna's body, whatever it is, but I identify with that and as a reflex action, I want to protect my body. So like that, similarly, as we keep practicing bhakti, what happens is that our reflex actions become more and more spiritualized. That means we think in terms of what is favorable for my bhakti, what is unfavorable for my bhakti. And that sense of belonging, that sense of connectedness, that is a feeling which you have to develop. Missy Krishna, I surrender to you. Ami to tomar, tumi to amar, kikaja paradhane. Bhaktivinoda says that, I am yours, you are mine. What else do I need in my life? What other wealth do I need? Yes, singing songs like this can also invoke that mood in us. But that invocation will be at present temporary. So for us, that emotion will come by gradual cultivation. And the cultivation means action. We act in a way that we consider ourselves as parts of Krishna and think what is favorable and what is unfavorable and make our decisions accordingly. Does that answer your question? Thank you. So last question.
Thank you, Shabu. Based on the pastimes of Vibhishan chanting Ram, like I was just thinking that probably as a devotee, as we come into Krishna consciousness, you kind of find yourself in a group of devotees who have helped you to introduce Krishna consciousness, but all the time it might not turn out to be something inspiring for you. Like the way in Vibhishan's case, he wanted to actually convince Ravana, but he wasn't getting favorable for him. But then Vibhishan took the side of Ram. So in the same way for a devotee, like how wise it is for him then actually to think of an alternative when he's finding himself, the group of devotees he's with is not very inspiring.
Okay. So if a devotee is introduced to Krishna consciousness by some devotees, but then later doesn't find that devotion, the devotee circle very inspiring, and then can that situation be compared with, say, Vibhishan's going over from Ravana's side to Ram's side? And can a devotee also look to change one's devotee circle? Firstly, the two are not comparable, because we are in a devotee circle, whereas Ravana was clearly anti-devotional. So we cannot compare, even if that devotee circle is not very favorable for us, we cannot compare them in that situation. Firstly. At the same time, it is not necessary that the same devotees who inspired us in the initial scene of our spiritual life, the same devotees will inspire us later. Because we also grow, they also grow, and as we move onwards, we understand our nature better. And then we understand our nature better, then we may also find that, okay, that actually the way these devotees are preaching or these devotees are serving, that doesn't inspire me so much. So if that happens, then we need to adjust. And we need to find, being inspired in our bhakti is our responsibility. So we have to seek inspiration. And if we find some other devotees are inspiring, that's perfectly fine. Where we can take more inspiration from that devotee circle. The two important things are there, right? We should always be grateful to those devotees that helped us in our bhakti. Just because they are not inspiring us now, does not mean that they are not good devotees or that we should be ungrateful to them. No, we should always be grateful to them that they helped us at a particular time in our life. Very important to be. For that, we are grateful. But we should see that actually the same Krishna who helped me through these devotees at this time, now that same Krishna is inspiring me through these devotees. So if we see those devotees as separate from Krishna, then we will have a fragmented vision, Puthak Drisha, as Bhagavatam says. But if we see the integrated vision, where it's Krishna who is inspiring me through this devotee or this devotee, then we will move onwards towards Krishna in a steady way. So that is the absolute best respect. We should not be ungrateful to those devotees, always be grateful. And second thing is, we should not do this at just the whim of the mind. Because any devotee circle that we go through, there will be problems. It is, if you want a circle of ideal devotees, we are not going to find this in the material world. And even if we found that as a circle, we would not be admitted in it. Because we are not ideal. So, there are always going to be some devotees who may rub us wrong. And some problems. We shouldn't just be hopping from one devotee circle to another circle to another circle. Because then, as I was telling that, yudavikalpa, mind looking for easy alternatives. So it should not be done just on the whim of the mind. And it should not be done in a way that disrespects or disregards the early devotees. But if after a steady observation of our mind, we feel, maybe say, I like to study Shastra more. But here the devotees are interested only in the book distribution. See, book distribution is wonderful, but if what inspires me is scriptural study, then I may have to look for social circle where studies of scripture is more. Or if my interest is more in doing, say, Harinam Sankirtan, and I am surrounded by a circle who wants to go deep into Shastra, I don't feel inspired, I feel burdened by that. Then I may shift to a circle where there is more of Harinam Sankirtan happening. These are simple examples, but the point is that we have to take responsibility for our spiritual life. So, if we need to find a social circle that inspires us, then we should do that. And ideally speaking, it should be done with at least the informing the devotees, if not taking their lessons. If the devotees guiding us are mature, then they'll bless us. Sometimes it may even happen that there are several examples that sometimes a devotee takes lessons from a particular spiritual master. But after that, they feel more inspired by some other spiritual master. Then they tell their spiritual master, Maharaja, whatever, I would like to serve unto him. The spiritual master doesn't object. It's done in a very graceful, respectful way. And the devotee serves under their spiritual master. So how we see it in our moment is that there is Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. So for us in Krishna consciousness movement, Prabhupada manifests through all these three. Prabhupada manifests as our Guru, that is our primary spiritual master. Prabhupada manifests as the general devotees in ISKCON. They are like the sadhus for us. And Prabhupada manifests as his books, that is Shastra. And that approach is in a broader sense also. So it is the same Krishna who is manifesting through whichever devotee we are inspired by. So we need to do it in a very respectful, courteous way. No devotees, those who have guided us, they should not feel rejected or slighted by us. And we also, if we go to some other devotee circle, we should not speak bad about those devotees. That was just our need, and that devotee circle is also wonderful. And for some other devotee circle, so for other devotees, that devotee circle will be much more, this is so wonderful, how could you do this? So that's perfectly fine. There is a room for individuality in bhakti. And at the same time, while asserting our individuality, we shouldn't stampede on others' toes and hurt others. We can gracefully move onwards in our bhakti. Does it answer your question? Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki
Jai. Hare Krishna, you can have your stretch break and washroom break. It's a 15-minute